religion factors, name it, whatever factors that divide us in this program, it drops. You know, not for everybody, but for the majority it does, because somebody once pointed out, think of all of us hanging out and somebody put a keg in the middle of the room. What will happen in 2 hours of us using together? Think about it. All the people that's been in these rooms. You have a thing, but you've put us here for years together. We learned to love on each other. So I ran into that when I came in here. I became trusting. I came with the people. But I found out, and the downside of these personalities is when you start getting into cliques, and you see, there's one thing about a support group, and there's a clique. A support group builds you up. A support group will tell you what you need to hear. The people I hung with became a support group. When I finally started getting things, they became my support. And they were people that would call me on my shit. There were people who were not worried about my feelings. There were people that weren't going to let me do what I wanted to do. When I first got in there and I got in the clique, they let me do what I want. No one wanted to tell me what I needed to hear in my life, in these personalities. And what I did is I spent 2 years in and out of this program just getting high. You know, I had 5 relapses from 82 until 84. And I was in and out, bouncing. Couldn't figure out why I get, you know, I wouldn't use, I'd come to meeting, I went to meeting all the freaking time. All the time I'd come to these meetings. But I'd end up not doing what's wrong. There was like maybe 2 people in my life that had the guts to come tell me, what you doing wrong? Oh, that's okay, you want the bars, man. Because I was doing, you know, the things that you do when you're new here. I got myself in a relationship. I started banging the bars. Because I found out I'm addicted more to a lifestyle more than addiction. See, that was a hard part I had to kick, and most people don't understand it. I had a lifestyle of things. It was more than sticking needles in my arm, drinking and partying. I had a gang late life and stuff with people I grew up with, people I hung with, the whole mentality of my whole social structure. I was addicted to that. You see, for a long time I put down the drugs, but I still lived a lifestyle. I was still Danny Stalker, who did the same stuff, the same way I deal with women, the way I deal with my business practices. Nothing changed. I just put down the drugs to try to carry out a lifestyle. And that kept leading me back. And the problem with it is, when I wanted to feed into the thing, is that when I was in this clique and these personalities, no one was able to tell me. And there was a few people who were in the program would say, yo, Dan, you're messing it up. Oh, man, I'm with all these other people. I got 10 people with me saying I'm doing okay. As long as I'm not using, it's okay. What's all of it? You got 5 years. You got 6. Why aren't they saying that? You just an uptight individual. You just uptight. And I learned this rule. And like the lead speaker last night said, my language is a little flowery, so I try to watch it. But there's a rule in the stop program I tell all new people, especially ladies. Not everybody in this program that rubs your ass is your friend. And not everybody that puts a foot in your ass is your enemy. Because I found out all the people that are on, damn, you're doing something good. I don't know my friends. And see, they were just addicts still doing the addict thing. But I ran into some people, man, that was willing to put a foot in my butt. Willing to face me off and say, what you doing? Don't you know you're killing yourself? Don't you know you're going to die? And it's like, nobody else is telling me. And I didn't want to hear what they had to say. And they were like, I remember a few of them. I know them by name. They became my good friends. And I ended up high. I think 3 detoxes, 2 rehabs. And I got loaded. I got with this chick in this program, and we had a baby in the program. And it basically went after we had the baby. She looked at me and goes, "Oh, I want a baby, not you. You make nice babies." I'm happy to report I've been paying for that child for the last 18 years with no relationship. That's a person I don't know I met in this program. Sometimes guys, when we deal with personalities, women, guys don't understand the women, and I don't mean any offense to any women. They slick as you. I found out the women in this program, we see this beautiful young woman in front of us. Oh, she's so beautiful. We forget it's an addict. It's a freaking addict that survives on the streets. Guys use their muscle and their mouth to get by. Women use other talents. And sometimes I guarantee you, women, they don't always quit the talents when they get in here. They're used to manipulation, calling, swinging their butts and showing that little smile. Get what they want. They come on the program with a stupid alcoholic meeting. Okay. What you need? And I'm like, okay. They play the game. They don't know they're doing it sometimes. They're still sick. I didn't know I was feeling my addiction when I was living my life. No one told me. But when I went to Gateway in 84, I was beat. This disease almost killed me. My last high destroyed me. I went out after this relationship. It's like a lot of people in the program of this clique turned against me because they were with her. And I was like, oh, my God. Where's my support group? I was like, okay, you should have known better. I was like, oh, all of a sudden, I should have known better. You didn't see it coming? No. No, I didn't see it. I didn't know. I thought this girl loved me, and I loved her, and no. I went out getting on. My last high when I went out was not to get high. It was a suicide run. I stuck around the program for 2 years. I said, you keep losing that the way you do, you're going to die. And you always been right. But people said we're always right, and I thought, you're always right. Maybe it'll work this time. Maybe I will die. And I wanted to, because I lost the ability. I want to put the gun to the head and things. So I figured, as bad as I was, I can go use and all that stuff. And it didn't work. I lived. So everybody, I always hear when you come in the program, if I use, I'm going to die. Not always. Me and Matt were talking about. We got a friend, me and Matt, sharing the back there. You think this dude's a hardcore drug addict? He was here when I got here, and he's still using. Sometimes you just don't die. Sometimes you do. But sometimes you just suffer. And I've watched people, I lose it. The thing I want to share on that, man, your addiction doesn't get shit what you lose. If I use, I'm going to lose my babies. You think your addiction cares? Yeah. If it did, you would stop using a long time ago. Before you went to jail, before you did that time, before you lost your family, before you lost your addiction, don't care. We assume when we say getting us broke. Addiction don't care. Addiction is still addiction. It wants to kill you in the long run. And it's going to, if you let it. So, I thought I'd die getting this program. I thought, man, if I go out and just use, and just a natural process would kill me. But I got back in this program. I was going to go to Highland Center up here in Johnstown. And a dude named Bill came from D.C. God sent in my life. And Bill came up to see me. He was a dealership, down in the dealership sound card. He said, I heard you in rehab again, Ben. Time. He said, what's your plans then? Well, I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to go to Highland Center. Bullshit. Sam, I'm going to tell you about the support group. Bill got in my face. Said, no. I'll tell you what you're going to do. See, if you go to Highland Center, you're going to play the game that you always do. You're going to roll over them people like you always done, like you always do. He said, I'm going to send you to a place where you're not going to grow up. They'll see you on coming my way. And they sent me to a place, those of you involved in Pittsburgh, the Gateway. And I remember walking into the Gateway, and I met some strong personalities, a Narcotics Anonymous. First person I met said, welcome to Gateway. And they knew about me. I think somebody informed their asses about me. Because, you know, I guess they studied my chart. And they said, if you don't want to do what we want to do, you can leave now. And the guy said, I got $5. Drug man's up on the Aliquippa Hills, far down the street. We need somebody to fill your bed in 20 minutes. So you got a choice. You want to do what we want to tell you to do, or you can leave now. We're not going to play with you. And I'm like, it taught me the first principle of this program. This program don't need me. I need the program. Programs don't need you. I don't care who you think you are. We don't need you. Not we. Let's say the program don't need you. This program will survive. We have to without you. I don't care if you think you've got a gift to this man. You Joe in it. You can die tomorrow. Program will continue. It will live. You know, and I had to learn that. Because, you know, I used to learn, oh, man. And they taught me that principle of this program. We want you. We love you. But you're not me. We can replace you. And you will be replaced. See it all the time. Hard principle. And I got in here and I said, man, some tough love. And people began, I found out what is the support group. People loved me enough in this program, the personality, the positive program, was able to love me enough to tell me what I needed to hear. They told me some very principles of this program that started saving my life. They weren't interested in Dennis Films anymore. Because what I had to understand in Gateway was, I have a disease I'm dying from. And in my addiction, I don't know where you are on this road of addiction. I was at the end. Some of us always think that I was at the end. I'm a chronic user. My body started processing shit. I started becoming a street bum. I lived on the street, pissing myself. I was a mess. I couldn't no longer tolerate the drugs in my system. I mean, I'd smoke a half a joint and be wasted. I lost the tolerance to handle the shit. Makes it your liver something. You can't even process. This is the last stage when you start getting all the physical rounds. Because I was 19. I was 21 this time. And they said, you're going to die. And, shit, man. And I learned that this is not a social glove. That this is a treatment for a deadly disease. Did you hear what I said? It's a treatment for deadly disease because most of us don't get that idea. Most of us never get that idea that we are here trying to treat a deadly disease. I think it's a fucking social club. We're here messing with the women, doing this, and coming to little retreat sandwiches, and oh, we just love them. I had to learn there that if I was going to survive and get gray hair like I do, I had to find out I am dealing with a disease that's going to kill me. And believe me, I watched it for 18 years killing people. People coming in not taking the shit serious. You just too tight. Now, we just tell me, I haven't been here in a year. I live in Colorado. I just heard the death list. Friends of mine. Dead. Two of them from addiction. How many lives are being destroyed? They're dead, man. They're not making it back. They're people I worked with, people I cared about, people I tried to help, people I tried to. They're dead. They'll never be in a narcotic anonymous room again. You know the list. And the thing is, it's not this year. They have 18 years watching this. Watching this disease, people coming in here, not understanding this principle of this program. We're dealing with an addict. Because they used to tell me this is a treatment, not a treat. to the treatment. We are treating a disease. I don't know why you're here. I'm here to treat my disease. Because I'm not going to let this thing kill me. One day at a time, I began taking this thing. What I have, I'm here for. I'm here to get treated. Once you get that focus of this principle, the personality becomes secondary. Because the thing is, I was sharing this with someone last night. I met this guy, man, I still remember, big black guy. He was in Gateway, man, and he grabbed me by my... He grabbed me down low, and he said, you need to stop thinking with these if you're going to live. I'm like, what the hell are you touching? I remember, and I'm like, what's that? And he sat me down and said, let me talk to you. Because I knew that I was in and out of the program 2 years. I had 13 months. I won out. And this was also a time where young people were not common in NA or AA. I was one of the first. This was back in '80. Most average person walking into the program was in the 30s. I was 19. The 19-year crew was not here yet. I was one of the first. You know, there was them. And they were like, I remember going to my first Yelp Sister program, AA. I was asked, what the hell are you doing here? You got another 10 years. When they heard my son, I said, welcome. You here. They didn't take long to find out. I was a full-blown addict. I was not out there having a little six-pack, a little beer, and a little smoke. I was full into it. As much as anybody's been using for 35 years, I was into this shit. You know? And then all of a sudden, the door opened up and young people all over the place. So they kind of took a little interest in me. And he told me to stop thinking, my friend. And he sat down and said, you know that girl you all getting high over, man, you all heartbroken about? He said, let me give you a scenario. You're dead. You didn't make it to Gateway. You're dead. They just planted your ass. You're dead. She's out now while you dead, gave up your life, never to have kids, never to join another holiday, never to join another nice thing in your life. She's out banging someone else. What did you just do? You gave up your life for what? And I call her, and God started doing really wonderful things in my life. I called her up, and a guy answered the phone from the program. He's like, what you doing with my girl? And she got, oh, we're just starting. I said, I'll deal with you when I get home. I put down the phone, and it hit me. He was right. If I'd have died, she'd just be sleeping around with another dude. I'd be dead. I said, never again will I ever let anyone take my chair of my life. That's mine. That's my chair. You can't have it. I'll share one. I'll go get you a chair. That's mine. I learned that in this program. I don't let nobody push me out. I don't let you hurt my feelings. I'll love you to death in this program. That's my chair. I deserve to be here. I have that right to be here. Guess what? You do too. It don't matter what you did, what you've been. You may not think of yourself very worthy. But you have the right to be here. I don't care if you just started to put a needle in your arm today. Or smoked a joint today. It's your chance. And you have the right as I have. As much as I time as I do. You have as much right in that chair as I do. That's your chair. Don't ever let nobody take you out this bone, and you do. And that's why I began to talk on this, on the one that I am, because I see so many people giving up their chair because of personalities in this program. The same utopia, we're dealing with addicts. And for the most part, we do real good with each other. Like I said at the beginning, we put down all our barriers. I met a guy down in D.C. once, man. He was from the NRA, Irish thing, over there, all that shit they have. They said the only place that they can get together, Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, is the meetings. When you come to meetings, the shit goes away. I thought that was pretty cool. And he was into all that. I said, yeah, wild story. Like, wow, it was a really interesting story. You know, he didn't get into any detail. But he did share one thing in these meetings, the shit stops. He asks. It don't matter what your race is, but it stops. With them doors. Our egos should stop. Hit them doors. The principles ride in this program. As I was saying earlier, what I want to share on real quick is that, you know, you're wanting, you're loving this program, but the program don't need you. Me and Matt was talking about this. You know, you think sometimes, man, if I leave this area, it's going to fold. It's going to fold. There ain't no way these fools down is going to keep this area running. For the founding people, there was a lot of this area, Matt liked to give it to two, but a lot of us did, like Matt Lance said, we moved away. Lance moved away from this area. I did. I went to Colorado. And a bunch of us just, you know, took off. Some of us ain't in service. But you know what the principles do for us? I haven't been here in a year. This shit's still going. They didn't need me. They didn't. You see, that's one of our principles. You follow me on this one? That's why principles and steps are so important. Because the spirit of NA will carry on no matter what person fills our seats. The area of service, this unity retreat continues on. Even though some of the older members left, because the principles we set down in what we call guidelines and traditions carry on. Then the next generation steps up the bat. Because it's bigger than any one person here. The steps are bigger than any one person here. If I leave this area, then what kind of return? I'm not. God will find somebody else to move in my spot. That's why this works. If it was us West, we'd wreck this thing, man. We'd ruin this program the way some people act in this program. But we got principles that overrun everything. That's why they got to come first. The principle is from that. It isn't, I was reading in the books earlier. You know, I don't agree with everything that's written in there. I've been around a long time. Some of the shit they written out now, how you're supposed to do. I'll be honest, I don't agree on a personal level. I just don't agree with that shit. That's what it is. I personally, but as a group, I adhere to it. When I was a GSR, we voted on something. Believe me, we were talking about this last night. Me and Matt were probably the only two idiots that voted against this unity retreat stuff when it was first brought up. I remember when they first mentioned unity retreat about 7 years ago. And it was a vote. I hope I didn't break your amenity there, man. And our area was a baby. And we were just going through some financial stuff. We were so shaky, man. I just started putting the money together. Let's have a unity retreat. And we need this amount of money or we lose everything. I said, you're out your mind. And I think it was a vote at all. Everybody. You're out your mind. This ain't never going to work. We're barely keeping this area, Lahamna, together. I mean, we had some internal conflict ripping us apart.
Tree.
We need, I don't know how much extra dollars. Did you understand someone just stole $600 from this program? And the screw the vote went on. And the screw conscious carried. I disagreed with this thing. Not because of the firm, not great. But I didn't think we were going to pull it off. We had enough of issues going on. And I was a treasurer, and I'm looking at the book going, we're barely surviving. The group voted. The group rolled. We would have a community retreat. And it begun. Was I in disagreement with this thing? Yeah. But God looked down and let the group rule. And I went along with it. Instead of throwing, packing my bag, I went along with the program. 6 years later, what's number six, man? Look what we got, man. See, the principle of rule. You see, that's how it works in this program. We have root conscience. We have principles that override our personal decisions. You see, I hate when people get in the program and they get to feeling, I ain't doing this anymore. No, the group. When I was at GSR, my group used to vote on issues. And I thought some of the votes were crazy. But you know, my responsibility, and I think it's so bad when people go up there and try to vote on their own conscience. I asked them, I said, did you ask your group about this? No. Go back to your group. Ask your group. Because if I did that, we wouldn't have a community retreat. You go back to the group. You go to the principal. Not your personality. Because your personality could be wrong. Guess what? I've been wrong lots of times in this program. And I learned that principle. You go and ask your GSR. You can sit on and the group votes. You may vote with them or against them. But you take that vote, whatever that group, your group said, to. And that's how the group conscious, and that's how these principles work. What time is that? Is that new? Is the other guy?
Yeah.
Was he?
Yes.
So that's how, you know, what I want to end up saying, I don't know what time. What time you said?
9:30.
Okay. But what I learned here is that I'm going to end up on is that your seat, George. If I want you to hear anything, do not let nobody take your seat. Because not everybody here is here for recovery. Some of us are here just because the booty's good. I'm sorry. Some of us are here because it's a social club. A few are here to get recovery. And the thing about this program is it will weed out the difference. It doesn't mean they don't have it. And that's what the program says. I do not have the right to judge why you here. That's your business. Even if I know you here just to get the booty, you're here selling drugs, guess what? You got that right. Anonymity. You have the right. I cannot say you can't be here. I can't say that. It's not up to me to judge your program, even though I could say something about your program if I know you on a personal thing, like the guy I was talking about last night. But you got the right to be here. No matter what you come in this program for, you got that right. Because the principles say so. Not about your personality. And a part of my personal program of recovery is that I must somehow find a way, no matter what our differences, let you have that right. That's my personal thing. I never, ever, 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 and I hope I never, ever did. I know I pissed off a lot of people in this program, and that's one thing. But I hope I never made another addict not want to sit in that chair because of me. They may not agree with me. They may not even like me. But I hope I gave them enough of area, enough of love to know they can sit in that chair. That I never judge them. Because I remember what it is to be in and out. Sometimes we judge people. you ain't gonna make it. Only like someone said, you look at the way you dress. One time I came in the meeting, I used to do landscape. I was off. I had khakis on, man. I had mud up my ass. Somebody judged me. I had 4 years clean. I'm sitting there having my cup of coffee. I'm beat. You know how young you beat. I'm sitting there drinking my coffee. I'm all nasty and smelling. Dude, come over and judge me. You can get this program, dude. No, he just started talking down at me. I'm like, I just down half the time. So I seen a sponsor walk up to this dude. You see the homeless dude? That dude got 4 years and just got off of work. I seen his sponsor. I knew his sponsor. He got 4 years clean. He ain't homeless. He just got off work. I just sat there and let him run. I was so thankful. You're going to find out how stupid you are. But like I was going to finish up on, don't give up your seat. As much as we need each other, and we love each other, you gotta learn to draw a line. To find out, the last 18 years I've been here, almost 18 years, most are not here. Most are not here. You see, when I got clean, I used to have to do both programs, because there's just not enough of meetings on either side. I had to do both programs. I would not tell you how many times somebody in NA walked up and said, you don't belong here. Literally. Can you believe that? You shouldn't be in this program. Pick a program. I had my chilling remark for him. It was called the FU. And I said, I don't matter what you think. He said, why is that? I remember, you ain't going to be here long enough. But you imagine how I let that hurt me. If I let his opinion sway me, his personality, and I left, forget it. I tell you what, a few times I felt it, man. I don't need this. I don't need these issues with these personalities. That, you know, they're trying to have power, and they're having this guy, you got them in the program. They just don't have power to trip off the bus. Their ego is this big. And then they sit there and they're like,
you don't belong here.
No, I do. It don't matter how many different programs I go to. If I want to hit all, every letter with an A on it, it don't matter. Because the only time for membership is designed to stop using. That's it. If I want to affiliate myself with a church group, organizations, all the AA groups, SA, NA, whatever, there's so many, CA, CNI, they got them all out in Colorado. It's my name. CMA, CA, you got them all. It don't matter. What matters is that I want to be affiliated and be a member of Narcotics Anonymous because I have a desire to stop using. Don't let anyone tell you don't belong. Don't get yourself so involved in a clique, man, that you're not getting recovered. You're so stuck. Because I had one thing I had to learn to do in this program is put my personal recovery first. Before the principle, I had to learn to live the principles. And that's the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. And I had to learn to leave people behind. Because the principle said, first recovery depends on how many years. Even though I got to be doing it, I must keep going. And people will come and go. I came here tonight, I'm going to end this. I see the old faces, Lance and all the people that help, you know, organize this thing. I know them, but the majority I don't know. For the new personalities in here, but our principles remain the same. That we're here for recovery. I hope you are. And that means you have the right to be here. You have the right not to let anyone push you out of this program. Because it's your program. It's my program. But it's your job to keep your program and not let all the, what we say, carry the message, not the mess. I'm glad to say I carry that to the best of my ability. I try to carry the message because there's a lot of messages going on here and I hear them all the time. And my personal recovery is I don't hang in cliques. I just go to meetings. And I got people that I love and I care, but I don't absorb myself in any cliques. I just go to meetings. I'm there. I'm available. I'm going to hang with this crowd. And sometimes it means I'm going to be alone. Sometimes I'm not going to follow the crowd. I don't mess with women in this program. Not because women are wrong. It's because I choose not to. Because if one sick here is bad enough in my life. So I'm going to get off the stage and let the next gentleman speak. Thank you. And of course, I'm still an addict. I apologize for the confusion before the meeting. Someone like to read apologies. We didn't open the meeting with serenity prayer. I'm sitting there thinking, you know, well, it already started recording. We can let it go because I don't want to sound like an ass on a tape, but. Principles before personalities. That was my personality. So could we open this meeting with serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. If we have the reading of sure.
Good morning. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this attitude, either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jail, institution, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts have had this last chance. Those who are addicts today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been provided itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you. Again, I apologize for the confusion and the late start. Next speaker is Jonathan.
An addict named Jonathan. And I'm from the Central Western area of Narcotics Anonymous, and my home group is Thursday Night New Freedom. And I indeed experienced some new freedom. My clean date is 11/25/93. Like, I never say that to brag or boast, but just to let somebody know, because I know the first time I went to a meeting, I couldn't believe that people stayed clean for more than like 15, 20 minutes at a time, as long as it took to go to cop. So I always say that, and like by the time I'm done, like the gentleman who I first heard said, like I compared, he said, like, he's worse than me, I can do this. And I've been here ever since. Like, they called me some time ago and told me that I was sharing on principles before personalities. And I said, well, what do I know about principles before personalities? And then it dawned on me that I'm a personality, you know, and like I remember coming here unprincipled. You know, I live by some, what my sponsor calls non-existent virtues, you know, that stuff that I needed in the street to survive. And like I come to Narcotics Anonymous, And I stood around, I watched, and I listened, and like, I was a thief. You know, I was a thief in the street, and I come to Narcotics Anonymous a thief. But I wasn't stealing stuff from you. I was still in recovery. And I used to follow guys around all the time. And like, these guys had 4, 5, 6 years clean, and they did meetings all day long. I couldn't believe these guys were going to meetings all day long. And that's what I did in the beginning. I followed these guys around, and I heard them sharing, and I was just like taken with it, and like I was just overwhelmed. I mean, I would go home, and like I would try to share this with my sister, and she would say, yeah, okay, calm down. But I was on fire. I was excited about the fact that like I had found something where I could go, and I could belong, and like all I had to do was show up. I couldn't believe it. Just keep showing up, and things won't get better. And that's what they told me. And like the first time that I really, you have to bear with me, like I'm a little emotional right now. There's a guy who I met in this fellowship. And he did something like early on, like laid me out, you know. He had a friend who lived what we call an alternate lifestyle. You know, and like, I remember him standing up at a meeting, and I love this brother, and I respect him. And he said, look here, you may not agree with the way he's living, but he's my friend, and I love him. I don't care what y'all say about him. He's my friend, and I'm not going to deny him because you want me to. Man. You know, and I know these guys are friends. You know, and like his friend shared some things. Like just laid me out, and like one of the guys that was sharing last night was sharing about a sponsor teaching him how to share. That's what I learned how to share. I learned to like I have to talk about me, and talk about the things that are going on in my life. You know, like I come in here without any principles. I mean, the stuff that I believed in was like I got to get you before you get me. That was my principle. If you do something to me, I got to do something back. I can't allow you to get out on me because then I look like a chump. I can't go back on the set and everybody knowing that like you got out on me. I gotta do something. I gotta have a plan. I got to be on top. I cannot run around the street being like you want me to be. And I come here and like you guys start talking about like honesty. I said, well, honestly, I can't be honest. You're talking about being open-minded. Open-minded, what is that? You know, it's my way or no way. That's the way I always live, you know? Since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, I found out, like, a guy could have one woman. My thing was always I had to have one, and my foot in another relationship. Always preparing to step off. Because anytime you got close to me, I had to get away because I don't want you near me. I don't want you finding out what a scumbag I am. I always got to step off. So my principle was, gotta have one of you, gotta have a spare. You know, I come here, you guys talk about like, sharing. Sharing what? The places I come from, you don't share nothing. That means you're vulnerable. That means you expose yourself to being burned. I can't do that. You talk about responsibility. I said, I'm responsible to me and me alone. But I kept coming around. I stayed here like you suggested to me. Stay here, hold on, and listen to what's going on. Get yourself a sponsor and get involved in this program. And like, a little bit at a time, like things started to make sense to me. You know, like show up, you know, and get home and get involved in service. In principle before personalities, in service work is where I really found out that stuff worked. Because there are some characters in here who will tell you some stuff about how this thing is supposed to go. And if you don't have some character, some backbone to stand up and listen and challenge people from time to time, you will get run around. You know, I heard Dennis sharing about like being a homegroup. Thursday night has been my home group since I've been in Central Western. And at one time, I was the only home group member at Central Western. I mean at Thursday night in Freedom. The only home group member. I remember getting all the money. I remember making decisions to buy the coffee. I remember setting the literature up the way I wanted it set up. I remember a guy coming in, was working with the circus, and asked me if I was the president, and I was tempted to tell him, yeah. Because that's the way I felt, you know. But the point that I'm trying to allude to, like, the principle was I need to show up. I need to stay there. I called my sponsor, and I said, look here, man, like, there's nobody showing up. There's nobody coming. I mean, I would have a group conscience by myself, go to area, and like, vote, you know, and stay involved in the area, and like, just cause all kind of chaos, because there was nobody there to check me. Nobody to check me. My personality was just running rampant. And people would say, okay. And I would just yell and scream, and I called my sponsor because it was driving me crazy. I said, look here, man, like, there's nobody showing up. You know, so all the people with time, nobody's showing up. I'm the only guy here. I'm talking about, like, having a format and like, having this here every night. You know? And like, not replacing this stuff. And like, he said, look here, man. Are you still clean? I said, yeah, I'm still clean. He said, are you still opening up that meeting? I said, yeah, I'm still opening up the meeting. He said, well, what the fuck's the problem? What's the problem? He said, if you keep showing up, you keep doing what you need to do, things are going to be all right. He said, this is God's program. It ain't yours. Take your hands up off of it. You just keep showing up. Bring your wretched ass off the cross because we need the wood. I kept showing up. I need to tell you today, that's one of the biggest meetings in my area, you know. We got a whole bunch of home group members that, and like, it's standing room only now, you know. But like, I was ready to get, my personality was ready to give up. You know, I was ready to slam the door shut and like, let it do whatever happens. You know, I've seen meetings close in my area, you know, and I've seen addicts suffer. You know, I'm pleased to say that, like, by showing up and having some character and some principles about me, like, today, there are a lot of people of color who show up to the meetings. I remember being the only black guy, the only black individual at a meeting in my area. I mean, I would show up and, like, I would listen and I would say, man, here come these John Deere tractor drivers in the building. I don't know what they're talking about, you know. But I kept showing up. I called my sponsor and shared my feelings, how I felt on a regular basis. I said, man, like, I don't know about staying here, you know. I really don't know about staying here because, like, they talking about tractors. They talking about, like, you know, this, that, and the other, and farm work, and like, I don't know nothing about that. You know, all I know is, like, I feel like I don't fit. He said, are they sharing pain? I said, yeah. He said, well, they just like you. He said, are they talking about using? I said, yeah. He said, well, they just like you. Stay there. Don't leave. And see, I went there not with recovery in mind. You know, you talk about honesty around here, one of our principles. I went there because there was a woman there who liked me and said she was going to give me something on a regular basis, so I went. On the way, recovery started to happen. You know, I started to feel better about myself. I started to feel better about this process, and I started to understand that, like, addicts are everywhere. Recovering addicts are everywhere. I mean, I went there judgmental. You know, what are these people I'm talking about? I come from Center Avenue in the Hill District in Pittsburgh. You know, I'm used to seeing guys with big fat hands and pus coming out of it. You know, and like, I read the newspaper in Meadville in the crime section because I'm used to reading it in Pittsburgh. The Sunday paper in Meadville is this thick. I said, man, where am I at? What am I doing here? But see, along the way, things started to happen. Like, I got a job there. And, like, I was working for this place called Salt Paint, right? Now, the guy who ran the place was supposed to be a Christian. Salt Paint was supposed to refer to being the salt of the earth. But I worked for this place, and I used to go to meetings every night and share about wanting to kill one of these guys because they drank, they smoked, they did dope on the job all day long. And we painted We did industrial painting. We painted all over the country. And like, there was like 20 or 30 vans that he had. 50 to 100 guys who worked, and out of 50 to 100 guys, maybe five guys had driver's license because everybody else had a DUI and couldn't drive. And I'm telling you, one time we was going a ton of one to New York, driving up the highway, 90 miles an hour, in the van that's full of explosive material in the back, they in the front, smoking a joint, I'm praying, and I'm early in recovery, I'm praying, but I'm every night I come to a meeting, I'm whining about what's going on. We going up the highway, we passed by Buffalo so fast that like all I saw was buff. We slide up the highway. Now check this out. I'm sitting in the middle. I'm sitting in the second row of seats. They sitting in the front. They got all this clutter up here. I'm sitting back by the explosives. They driving up and they smoking this joint. They passing it back and forth, and the seed pops. The guy drops the joint, and they both go to the floor looking for it. I look up and no hands in the windshield. And the self-centered individual that I am, I said, God, what are you doing to me now? Only thing I could see was the van tumbling over, and I remember somebody saying, God looks out for idiots and drunks and fools. I said, this van gonna flip over 900 times. I'm gonna break all the bones in my body, and these two monkeys gonna walk away from here without a scratch. But I kept showing up. And I kept talking about it. Principles say share. I kept showing up and I kept sharing about it. And like things got better. You know? Like I was able to like quit that job. First time in my life that like I walked away from a job, not because like I couldn't show up no more. I walked away because like there was something better and brewing for me. I got another job and got fired from that one. Because the records of my past. You know, I used to have a wife a long time ago. And I told you I always had to have one on the side. Well, while I had one on the side, she decided she had to get a boyfriend. Well, you know, I had a girlfriend. And like, she told me one day that like, you know, if I liked you, if I loved you as much as I loved him, we'd be inseparable. So it was like, maybe I shouldn't be here. You know, and like I walked away from that relationship, but I still claimed ownership of it. You know, like, she's mine. Everything she got belonged to me. If it wasn't for me, she wouldn't be who she is. And I'm not going to let some other guy have her. So I beat this guy up every time I saw him. Every time I saw this guy, I beat him up. And she would call me up on the phone. She said, you know that notch you put on his head? Well, I'm putting ice on it. And after I get to putting ice on it, we going to bed. And he going to get everything that you're not getting. So the next time I see him, I beat him up a little worse. And she said, well, you know, you beat him up pretty bad today, but you know that stuff that you like? I'm going to do it to him tonight. And like I kept showing up for that, you know? And then it dawned on me, I said, man, maybe I'll stop beating him up. Maybe she'll stop calling me and telling me this stuff. But like I was locked into it. I was locked into those principles that I had, those non-existent virtues that I had on the street. You know? I mean, and like, I jumped on this guy. Well, I wanted to jump on him. He was coming down Center Avenue, and he was walking by the police station. I saw him, and I did a U-E in the middle of the street. He saw me, knew my car. He took off. I'm chasing him up the street. He's running, and I'm driving. He runs past Aaron and Wally, and I cut up behind him, and there's a stop sign about this big. And I ran. And they pulled me over, and like, long story short, I got DUI out of that. And like 10 years later, that DUI can bite me in the back. You know, I was working at a place, RFT, one of those residential treatment facilities for juveniles, and like they worked me like a government mule. You know, I was trying to break in, and like they said, well, you can work for them, and I was working 2-3 shifts a day, you know, and like they came to me and said, after I turned in my clearance papers, they came to me and said, well, you filled out your application and you falsified it, you know. I'm like, I clearly remember the application said, have you had any arrest or convictions in the last 5 years? And no, I hadn't. Well, they told me, they said, well, it said 10 years. And like, you falsified the application, we have no choice but to let you go. I said, well, I filled the application out. You know, I said, this is 95, 96. They said, but when you filled the application out, it wasn't quite true. It was like 9 years, 11 months, and 27 days. You know, but they didn't hire me until after that. You know what I'm saying? It was like almost 11 years when they hired me. And they said, well, we got to let you go. But the principles of this program allow me to stay around. See, the old me, the old principles and the old personality I lived by would have been out in the parking lot with a baseball bat or one of them ice picks putting holes in everybody's tires. You fire me, I'll make you pay, you know. And I'd have been in jail because somebody had caught me because I don't know when to quit. You know, one tire wouldn't have been enough. You know, I'd have kept coming back and sticking holes in these tires and breaking out windows and you know, investing in Babe Ruth and dropping them in gas tanks. Because I know that devious stuff. I know how to do that, you know. The principles of this program allowed me to, like, accept the fact that, like, there was a discrepancy. I can't change it. I can move on. Like, I moved on, you know. And, like, things got better, you know. I need to tell you, like, I've worked for numerous agencies in my area, you know. And like I'm well respected in my area today, you know. I've received numerous awards, you know. And like one of the things that the principles of this fellowship allowed me to do was get in touch with me, because it says look into yourself. I looked at me and said, well, maybe this is an opportunity for me to do some other stuff. I kept working at these places and like. I'm talking about what's going on. I'm talking about like what we can do as a team to help these kids out. Nobody was listening to me. I'd share something at a staff meeting, and like they just looked at me like I wasn't there. And then like somebody beside me with a degree would share the same thing, and they said, "Great idea." I got tired of that. I said, "Well, what can I do?" I said, "Well, maybe you can go back to school." See, that's the first thing I quit. The first thing I quit was like school. You know, and like, man, there's no end to what I can do around here. I'm discovering there's no end to what I can do. See, like, I was caught up in like age. I would never share how old I am. You know, because when I was younger, I was too young, and now that I'm older, they say you too damn old. You know, well, I'm free to tell you, I'll be 51 in November. You know, and like I'm feeling great. You know, and like, look. I'm like the number two guy at my job, you know. I mean, like they give me more responsibility than they give the assistant director. I mean, and like, man, I'm having a ball, you know. I'm in my senior year at Edinburgh, you know. I mean. For a guy like me coming from where I come from, you know, to give up hope, you know, and like come to a place where they offer hope, you know, they offer hope. Like I read the literature, and like the thing that sticks out in my mind all the time, since the first time I read it, in step one, it said, at near the end it says, and now we have found hope. You know, I remember losing hope. I remember like not being in touch with hope at all, you know. And like here I am, and like things continue to happen. Things go on, you know. Life goes on. I'm telling you, I registered. I did my financial aid over the internet, you know. I've been doing it for the last 2 or 3 years. For some reason or another, this year confirmation number didn't come through. I'm up there with my bill, and there's no financial aid breakdown on it. So I go to the people, and I say, look, there's no financial aid. He said, well, what's your social security number? We go into, they go on the computer and say, well, you're not in there. This is like 2 days before this thing got to be in. He said, well, we'll give you this 800 number. Call this 800 number, and they'll tell you what to do. My personality said, there's no, ain't no sense of me doing this. But the principles of Narcotics Anonymous said, do the footwork. Do the footwork, show up, and what you need will happen for you. And I've seen it happen time and time again. I know it. I believe it like the Cowardly Lion and the Wizard of Oz. I believe, I truly, truly, truly believe that this stuff works. And like I call this number, they said, well, you're not in here. You have to fill out another application. We don't know whether it's going to go through in time or not. Just fill it out. I do it again on the internet. I go to print my, they said, make sure you print the confirmation page and take it to your institution, and they'll take care of it. Well, I go through all this trouble. I go to print the confirmation page. My printer ain't working. It's too late to go up to the school. It's in the evening, you know. So I do have the presence of mind, because I think somewhere the literature says, now you can have the luxury of thinking, you know. So I wrote it down, and like I went up to this, and I called him back and said, well, my printer ain't working. I called, you know, he said, well, just you wrote it down, that's good enough, and take it back. Now I'm standing, listen to what I'm saying to you. I'm standing in line, there's a long line of people just like me who are late with their paperwork. I accepted the fact that it's my responsibility, I'm late, so I got to go through what I got to go through. I'm standing in this line, and the line is moving like this, at a snail's pace. And I'm hearing what's going on, and this woman is telling these people, well, I don't know what you, only thing that I can see you can do, you can pay the tuition, because that's the only way you're going to be able to keep your classes. You can pay the tuition, and when your loan comes in, we'll reimburse you the money. And I'm standing there, and I'm saying, I don't really want to hear this. I need to get out of line and, like, go about the business trying to get the money to pay this loan. I get up. I'm the next guy in line, and the woman's telling the guy the same scenario she done told 20 people before him. And this woman comes out of nowhere. And she said, if you're next, I can help you over here. And I stepped over, and I told her what was going on. She said, come through that door over there and come to my office. And I could go to her office, and I explained to her what happened. She said, what's your social security number? And I gave her my social security number. She said, well, what's your student ID? And I'll give her all the information about me. She goes in back, she said, don't you leave, like I was going to go somewhere. She said, you stay right here, I'll be right back. She comes back 10 or 15 minutes later. She said, what's your social security number again? And I gave her my social security number. She said, well, it's not in there. She said, but this is what I'm going to do for you. She said, you're a senior, and I know you want to get out of here, and we want you out of here. She said, but this is what I'm going to do for you. And she wrote down on my bill, paid in full, and he got a refund coming. She said, take this over to the desk and tell them I sent you over there. If anybody got any questions, to come and see me. Look. If I listen to my personality, if I listen to me, I don't be in that line. I stay at home with the clicker in my hand, surfing through the cable, trying to find some freedom. But you folks gave me some principles about standing up and showing up and being where I need to be to get what I need to get. And I believe that it works. I went on the net yesterday before I come here, and my money's there. Every dime of it, you know. I got a class. I got two more classes in my major, and then I offer one of them this semester. But I got some hope. See, because the guy who teaches the class is the head of the social work department. I've had him three other times, and I've aced all three classes, and I don't see any reason why he won't let me do that independent study so I can take both the classes and come up out of it when I'm supposed to come up out of it. You know, I got some hope. I know that if I do the footwork, if I show up and I talk to this guy about what's going on with me and, like, my desire to get out of there, you know, I can do it. You know, this process has allowed me in 5 years' time to get 10 years worth of experience. You know, they say that we're obsessive personalities. Well, see, I had a job, and one job wasn't good enough. You know how we do. I had two full-time jobs and was going to school full-time. And my day was full. I found time to do meetings and sponsor people. I know that's the way I stay connected. You know, so now, drama continues. Life continues on. My job tells me that because of 9/11, insurance rates have gone up. They can no longer afford to carry liability for the employees. So, like, you got to get $100,000, $300,000 worth of liability to drive your clients around, to transport a client from point A to point B. Well, I did some investigation, because y'all see it like, just don't take stuff on face value. Do some research, call somebody, and talk to somebody about what's going on. I called my insurance company, and my insurance company said, well, why do you need to up your insurance? I said, well, my job says, yeah, wait a minute, let me tell you something. What they didn't tell you is that some guy in Erie who was a social worker 4 or 5 years ago was driving a client around. He had an accident, harmed this kid, and they found out he was drinking. So all the agencies across the country are dropping their liability and making the client, making the employees pick it up. So what you're going to have to do is like change your policy from personal, because the policy that you have now is for personal liability. Because you drive these clients around, you have to get commercial liability. And he said, looking at your policy here, Mr. Lester, they call me Mr. Lester on the telephone. So looking at your policy, Mr. Lester, you got 3 vehicles. It's going to cost you $1,600 per vehicle a year to carry this insurance. And I need to tell you, when you call them, they're going to ask you why. And if you tell them something other than like you're doing it because of your job, that's called insurance fraud. Well, I ain't going to be fraudulent, you know, but like I didn't panic. I didn't get afraid. I didn't run away. Because like there's some evidence in my life that like if I stick to some principles around here, things will get better. You know, and like I made up my mind. I told my supervisor yesterday, my program director, look, this $1,600, I don't think that like I can afford to pay for 3 vehicles. And you know, if we have to part ways on September 1st, because September 1st is the deadline to have this declaration page in. She said, well, listen here. I talked to the people down in Mercer, and she's going to call Harrisburg and tell them to delay this thing a couple of weeks. She said, but ultimately you'll have to get it. And then, you know, there were some other people sitting in the office, and like she closed her door. She said, but if it comes to it, they're like, we got to terminate your employment. Because you can't afford the insurance, because we're not paying you enough money to afford the insurance. You can collect unemployment. I said, man, if I collect unemployment and I'm going to school, I can concentrate on all these classes I need to concentrate on, and like I can really do well. But I didn't stop there. I got some skills in like writing resumes. So I put a resume together, and check this out. That same woman that I went to Meadville for, because she said that she liked me, she was going to give me something. She works for CareerLink, and like she's a resume expert, and she got connected to all the jobs in the area. And like she took my resume, and like she started circulating it, and like, you know, like she brought back like 5 or 6 jobs, paying almost twice the money that I'm getting now. And like they asked for a certain amount of experience. I got more than they need. You know, based on her experience, she tells me that, like, I know the people that worked these jobs before you did, and, like, I know there's a certain amount of prejudice there. She said they can't do the job half as well as you can. And like, my ego agreed with her. You know, yeah, I know. You know. But, like, I stay as close to principles as I possibly can. I'm not talking about a guy who's perfect. Because sometimes I get looped and go off the deep end. You know, sometimes like people have to check me and reel me in. And like I'm real grateful for that. Like there are some people who care enough about me to say, man, you gone, you need to come back. You know, But if it were not for some of the stuff that you talk about around here, if it wasn't for some of the people, you talk about like clean time don't equal recovery. That's what I heard when I first came in here. But see, it didn't mean much to me when I heard it because the guys that I was following around had some clean time. They were still showing up. They still showing up. They here today. I mean, this guy right here, I mean, I followed him around all the time, everywhere he went. He's still here. I'm still here. I know if I continue to follow these guys around and do what they do, I'm going to get what they got. I've heard them share about, like, graduating from college. I've heard them share about getting new jobs. I've heard them share about, like, pain in their life that they got over. I've heard them share about, like, controversy going on. I've heard them share about trouble in area service. I used to go to area service and give them the blues. I was one of them guys who would read the literature, take it for face value, read the first three pages, and go on and throw it all over the place. Like I knew what I was talking about. And some of the people were intimidated, because the literature said we're strong-willed individuals who were thrust together. And nobody's more strong than mine. And like I was thrust in here. I mean, they get in there, you know. Because if you don't go to no meetings, we're going to lock you up. I didn't want to get locked up. I was 42 years old. Hey, I couldn't hang in the jail no more, you know. I had lost my place. But they keep showing up. See, the principles around here are strong. We got some personalities, but the principles are stronger than any personality I've ever met in Narcotics Anonymous. The people who show up, continue to show up, like I took one of my guys to a Thursday night meeting in Pittsburgh, and they was arguing about who's going to be the secretary, and everybody arguing had 10 or 12 years clean. Still wanted to do service work. That's the kind of stuff that, like, I've been exposed to. That's the kind of thing that keeps me coming around here. That's the kind of thing that keeps me full of hope. That's the kind of thing that makes me glad, grateful that I belong to Narcotics Anonymous. Because I could be anywhere else. I've been here. I've been in all those other places doing all that other stuff. But this is the most comfortable place I've ever been in my life. I mean, I go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings everywhere. And when I show up, they give me a hug. They say, welcome. You want some coffee? There's a coffee over there. Sit down and, you know, share if you want to share. At the pack, I had to wait my turn. You know, I had to watch everybody around me. Had to keep my hands in my pocket, all my stuff, and like I was uncomfortable. Never comfortable. I come here and I'm comfortable. You know? I mean, I could, man. Look, I was at a picnic a month ago and lost one of the rings off my fingers. This is a sponsorship picnic. There was 75 or 80 guys there. I dropped it. Messing with them hamburgers and stuff, and like the ring came off my finger. And like somebody's walking around with the ring, said, did somebody lose a ring? Only in Narcotics Anonymous. Did somebody lose a ring? I was standing outside of me the other night, went in my pocket to pull my keys out and drop my money on the ground. It was in the dark. Somebody saw an emergency. Somebody dropped some money. Look, where I come from, you put your foot on it and wait till everybody leave. Or you cough, or you double over in pain, or something to get closer to the money. But they bent over and said, look, I found some money. You know, and it went in my pocket and said, well, that's mine. And they gave it to me. You know, only in Narcotics Anonymous could this happen. You know, I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share again this year. I've been coming here for a couple of years, you know, and like this thing is growing like wildfire, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's growing like wildfire, and like this is truly an experience. The experience gets better every year. The people around here are so gracious. They make me feel like, oh man, I love it up here, you know? And then I see these guys everywhere. I can understand why so many people here now. I see you guys everywhere I go, and I get around. You know, again, I want to thank you, and thanks for allowing me to share.
I'd like to thank both of the gentlemen that shared. Can we have a greeting just for today?
My family has named George.
Just for today. Tell yourself. Just for today. My thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today. I'll have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today. I'll have a program. I'll try to follow to the best of my ability. Just for today. Through NA, I will get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I'll be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
That's for today.
Will you please form a circle and close the meeting?